This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. And, of course, everybody knows that Tuesday is Greg Tucker Day. But now Thursday is Greg Tucker Day.
Now, wait a minute. I thought today was Tuesday. What am I doing here?
Let me think. You know, you may be right. I seem to be in a time zone that really does denote what day it is. I've been that way for a while.
It's a time change. We're still recovering from it.
Want to let everyone know that the first part of this show is brought to you by At Home Care. And they're at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And if you would like to call them, they're at 713-4639, 713-4639, or pull it up on the internet. It's www.athomecaretennessee.com. And when you talk to them, you'll be talking to them about home care. And what that is, the normal chores, duties that you have at home that you have to take care of and you're no longer able to, they will come in and do that for you. And it's 24/7. It doesn't matter what time of day it is or what day, they'll come in and ensure that you're taken care of and the quality of life stays at its highest quality. And, of course, that means you'll be home. Well, Greg, it's been a while. We went about 2 days over our normal time, and that was my fault. And I want to apologize to you on the air.
Well, it certainly came off well. I thought you had a good day Tuesday.
And you look like you're rested. I came in, and you were over in the corner sound asleep, and I tried not to wake you up. And I know you've had a hard day and a hard week.
Oh, it was a very calm day. I started the day this morning having breakfast with the Kittrell Alumni Association.
Great bunch.
They meet for breakfast over at the campus sub shop. Yeah. Robert Stroop provides the facilities.
Oh, my great
and,
guy.
And, yeah, we get together, and I'm the kid in the group, so I get to hear a lot of old stories. It's a good source, but it's also a good bunch of guys.
Now, since you mentioned that, I do want to send my regards to the Cates family.
Certainly.
I was gone when that occurred, and I do want to let Steve and Ben know that she was a absolutely wonderful woman. And
made it to 98, didn't she?
Yes. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I think we need to mention a couple other people.
Well, on Ms. Cates, her farm, which is behind me, couple of farms back on Cripple Creek, I believe it's been put into a trust conservancy so that it'll be preserved as a classic farm of the period.
That's great.
And appreciate the family doing something like that.
And then she has another farm on the other side.
Oh, that's right. She is originally from Porterfield.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have a farm out that way, and she is into the road. Let's see, that's Northcutt. Goes mm-hmm. out of the county into Cannon County. And they've still got that place. Now, I'm not sure what the future is of it, but another one that where you kind of feel like you're going back in time when you go back and visit back in there. Yeah, I also learned at lunch today that Bubba Woodfin, our friend of many, many years, Woodfin Funeral Home, is in the hospital. We want to wish him a speedy recovery. I think he's got a very painful, difficult problem, hopefully not life-threatening, but we think of his family and him at this time.
I miss seeing and Bubba, because usually when I go see him, of course, it's at the funeral home. But he is one of the neatest guys I've ever known in my life. And you can't think of Murfreesboro without saying Bubba Woodfin. He's just one of those people that just goes right along with it.
Well, and he is like several others, but he's got so many family connections going so many different directions that I frequently will just stop by and ask him about somebody because either he grew up with them or he's related to them. He's great to talk to. He's got quite a collection of artifacts, memorabilia from this area. Anyone who hasn't been to a party at his house has really missed a treat because he's got beautiful. It's a museum. His backyard's a local museum.
Well, I would go to his house just to see Kay.
You would.
When you're talking about beautiful things, I mean, she's absolutely gorgeous.
Well, talking about beautiful women, I heard about one this morning that the people at breakfast hold the family in very high regard, and they got to talking about Nanny Bell, which I believe would be one of your aunts, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Do not call her that.
I understand.
You better not call her that.
She prefers to be called Nancy.
Aunt Nancy.
But as a young woman or as a child, Nanny Bell, she's still with us, isn't she?
She still is. And I tell you what, every one of my aunts are absolutely gorgeous. Every one of them. They could have all been models.
I heard that. The talk was, and I was, of course, encouraging it. I love to hear about the families. Your father was the oldest.
Yes.
And then he had five or six sisters. And then a baby brother.
Yes, there's seven of them in all, and Uncle Ben was the last one.
Uncle Ben.
And he's only a little bit, about 7.5 years older than me.
All right, well, then you had a lot of aunts.
Yes, I had a lot of aunts.
On that side of the family.
Yes, yeah. And they all did well. One of them I wanted to mention, since you brought that up, there's a movie that's just come out. It's called J. Edgar.
I've certainly heard of it.
And I will probably go see it, although I will probably get mad when I'm watching it. But my aunt worked for J. Edgar Hoover.
Is that right?
Yes, and her husband worked for the FBI. They both worked for the FBI. And I can remember when some of this stuff would come out that would be negative toward him, she would become irate. You better never say anything that would not be something that would be maybe nice about him or something like that. I guess that's the easiest way to put it, because I still hold him in high regard. And I got to meet him when I was 8. I think I told that before on the radio, that she took me in and I got to sit in there and talk to him by myself. And that was a treat. And then now I think back about it, man, how lucky could I have been?
I can remember my father, when there'd be a change of administration, one of the first things the new president would always do, and this goes back to Roosevelt and forward up until, Reagan, whenever, first thing they would do would be to reappoint J. Edgar Hoover. And
they better.
Perhaps there were two reasons. One, the quality of his operation. The other was he knew more than they did.
Of course.
about them as well.
You don't change things like that. But let me go ahead, since you brought it up. I had Aunt Marjorie was the oldest girl, and she married Harry Sims. And you got Aunt, I've already mentioned Aunt Nancy. And, of course, she is a McNabb now, and she married Stanley McNabb. And Aunt Jane, she married Robert Goodwin. And then my Aunt Sarah, she married Bob Jackson. And then my Aunt Mary, where I mentioned her earlier, she is a Schultz now.
Schultz.
And she lives in North Carolina, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And her husband's name is Roger, and he was with the FBI. So now I have given you that side of my family, since you brought it up.
And you've identified several very prominent families in the area. I believe the Goodwins relate closely to your background.
Yes.
Professional background.
Yes. And in fact, that's how it got started.
McNabb, is he the one that sells the cars, or is that a generation later?
He owns more car lots than anybody I know of, dealerships. And yes, that's Stan McNabb in Tullahoma.
Good.
And his family, all his children are in the car business. So it's something that's been passed down, and I presume it will continue that way.
Well, it's good to know that your family will support you in your current endeavors.
Yes. In fact, yes, you're exactly right.
Good.
Very sharp, big boy.
Yeah. Well, my day continued well, because for lunch I met with the Walter Hill Country Club.
And I have never been there.
And I'm going to take you to the Walter Hill Country Club. Our newest face there today was Bill Jones. Someone else from
that
your line of
work. That
name
sounds familiar.
Yeah, he had something to do with
law
enforcement.
Wasn't he in the banking business?
He probably banked a lot, but Bill likes to get with the crowd and talk. So we were hearing some good stories.
But the main
reason we get together, the country club, is to eat.
Yeah,
and it started because someone said they had a freezer full of fish, It had a good season, so we started seeing if we couldn't use up what was in their freezer, and that's kind of be about once a month.
We now, who did you say is the one that kind of cooks and puts it on? You were talking about Ray Thomas earlier.
Well, Ray always contributes. Robbie and Pee-wee. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Robbie and Pee-wee. Although Ed Jordan seemed to be something of an organizer in the early days.
Well, when you were mentioning food, Ed Jordan and food, it kind of goes together.
Yeah, it goes together.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if anybody passes ahead, it's usually Ed. It goes together.
Now, since you mentioned, we did mention Robert Goodwin, the sheriff. He hired Charlie Jr. Potts before he hired me, and he was one of my first partners when I went to work for the sheriff's office. And I want to mention that Junior is going through some hard times right now. So I want people to be thinking about him and praying for him, and also for Bubba, because those are two really great guys.
Now Potsy's in Christiana.
He is. Right. Now, speaking of sheriff's department and stuff like that, and law enforcement, I read an article in the paper Sunday that you had written, and man, you talking about going off the deep end.
Off the deep end.
Yeah.
Well, I know you got a law enforcement background. Tell me, does the deputy on patrol or the cop on the beat, does he have to know all the ordinances and laws that he's supposed to be enforcing?
There is no way that you could know all of them. I don't care how sharp an attorney, how sharp a law enforcement officer. But I can tell you, when I first started, it was very simple. There weren't that many. Yeah. And I can remember when the Murfreesboro codes were so small. I mean, you knew just about every law or every ordinance that was on the book at one time. But it's impossible now.
Well, with your strong background, let's go back about 110 years, and
I hadn't started yet.
Yeah, oh, that was before you. Well, yeah. Even back in 1900, you find some things very different, and some things never change. But first, you have to appreciate that there were no local ordinances relating to motor vehicles. There weren't any motor vehicles.
Right.
It was about 2 years.
Were there any to horses?
Yes.
And mules?
Yes, quite a few. In fact, there must have been, the city of Murfreesboro must have been full of animals, because quite a number of the ordinances
related.
You see
some of the old pictures, it was full of animals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was a sign ordinance. You know, here lately we hear a lot about sign ordinances.
Oh, we have sign ordinances in Murfreesboro?
Yeah, you hear about that. In fact, I think we're going to have a sign industry lobby getting pretty strong here, the way we've been going. Yeah, there was a sign ordinance in 1900. Mm-hmm. And apparently you could put up any sign you wanted as long as it didn't scare a horse.
Wow.
Now, wouldn't that be easy to enforce? All you have to do is...
So it didn't matter about the contents on the sign?
Contents, flashing candles, whatever it might be.
Huh.
So I can see them walking a horse by a new sign. As long as the horse didn't shy, the sign was okay.
Now, so it could be any size. It didn't matter what.
As long as it didn't block a public right
they
away.
They couldn't have neon signs back then, could they? Because they didn't have electricity problems.
No, they didn't. Not that I'm aware of. Other animal regulations, interesting. If you kept horses, as everybody did, or mules, or pigs, you had to be careful that they did not run loose on the street.
Hmm.
Other than that, seemed to be wide open. But cattle, different rule. You couldn't let the cattle run loose on the street at night.
And what would night have to do with it?
Well, and if you stayed up with them, there was no rule against letting them run loose at night. Now, I can just see free range in Murfreesboro, which is probably what was going on, because they probably were grazing them.
And we didn't have asphalt or concrete or anything like that downtown. Yeah,
there was some concrete.
Oh, there was?
In fact, well...
Now, we're talking about streets now.
Well, they called it pavement.
Yeah.
And the city was very touchy about pavement. The rule on pavement was that you couldn't put a wheelbarrow on it, you couldn't put a bicycle on it, you couldn't roll a wagon on it, you couldn't let your horse get on it, no mules on it, couldn't run your stock on it. The only exception they made for any wheeled vehicle was baby carriages.
So how much concrete was, how much pavement was actually laid down? It couldn't have been much.
The only pavement was sidewalks.
Oh, okay.
So really the rules were on sidewalks. The only wheeled vehicle, or wheeled anything that could be put on a sidewalk, was a baby carriage.
Was that only in the downtown area, the sidewalks?
The sidewalks primarily were around the square at that time.
I wonder if they had any on East Main Street.
There might have been, but I wouldn't think it'd be more than a block or so.
Well, I think that we have a phone call already. Caller, welcome aboard with Greg Tucker.
Truman?
Yes.
This is Johnny Parkhurst. How you doing?
Hey, Johnny. How are you? That's one of my cousins on my other side, on the Caffey side.
We better cover the Caffey side.
Yeah, there's 11 of them.
Truman, I'm listening to your program, and I've always enjoyed your program and discuss your features and your guests a lot of times with my friend David Mason.
Yes.
And we were just talking the other night. I told him that Greg was going to be on your show, and we both decided that we sure would like to see an article or an expanded article written by Greg on Enoch Wright. Now, I know he's written some about him in the past, but you could write a book on Enoch Wright.
That's exactly what has been the issue. I started working on Enoch Wright about a year ago.
Really?
I have a big, thick file on Enoch. And
well,
I did write
wonderful news.
Yeah, frequently what I say when someone asks about that, I say, it'll probably be a book. Fascinating, The Wizard of Hull's Hill. We did write about four or five articles in a series on his brother. Remember his brother and his Cadillac?
Yes, I read those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was entertaining. In fact, recently, John Lodell, our county archivist, asked me if I would take him down to where the remains of the Cadillac still exist. At least they did a year or so ago when I was writing about it. And I think he's going to see if we can make an effort to get it up here in Rutherford County as part of our local collection. Mm-hmm. But Enoch, I have a thick file on him, a fascinating personality, and I promise you we're going to write on Enoch.
Well, that's great news. And there's two more personalities that I don't think I've ever read anything on, one of them being Apple John, who used to walk the streets of Murfreesboro.
Remember him.
Back when I was a kid, and I'm sure a lot of people remember him.
Yeah,
and
Apple John. Apple John actually came out of my neighborhood. He came out of the hills around Donald's Chapel, and it would be on the kind of the south side of Braidable Pike, about a mile before you get to the Big Springs intersection there. A black fella, and I think he raised the apples, and then later he relocated in town. And he's another personality that we need to get in.
When
print
you see
somewhere.
Him, he would look like he was a traveling hobo because he had a handkerchief, not a handkerchief, but what do you call that? Whatever it is. Like a bandana, it would be tied around the end of his stick, and he would be carrying stuff in that stick. I actually still remember him vividly, and I know Johnny can too. That's been a long time ago, and of course
he seemed to have an overcoat on winter and summer,
right,
with his walking stick or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the third personality I had in mind that I've never read anything about, but there's a million stories on this man, and he's one of the most intelligent men I've ever known in Rutherford County, and that's Mr. Jim Deal. He's supposed to have the reputation of being the inventor of the first self-tying hay baler in the world.
Right.
And his farm joined the back of my daddy's place on Woodbury Road there.
Yeah. Right.
Double Springs.
Part of it, I believe, is now within the Walmart development there, yeah. His daughter died earlier in the year. No, it would have been his granddaughter, I believe, Lurline Dill.
Lurline was his daughter, not too long ago.
Yeah, just recently.
But there's 100 stories on him. I would go to his house when his health was failing. I used to go visit him sometime in the wintertime, And I never went to his house that I didn't come back having learned something new. He was just one of the smartest men I ever knew, and eccentric in some ways, but just a very intelligent people. And I'm sure if you ask around, you'll find a lot of stories about him. And I know you've got plenty of projects on your on your list there, but those are three that I would surely enjoy reading about.
Well, I expect we will write about Mr. Dill, because again, I had already picked up some information
really?
On him.
Right.
Lurleen, his daughter, was probably a girlfriend of my father back when they were in school, and she and I shared stories mm-hmm. frequently, so I was familiar with the family. But
well,
yeah, I would anticipate something on him.
When you start your writings on him, I could contribute a few stories about him.
All right,
some really funny things that he did, and some very interesting things that he did. So,
well, why don't you?
Anyway,
I'll
jump
you
off and listen to the rest of your show, and I'm enjoying it. And Mr. Tucker, I certainly appreciate the writings that you've made about the personalities here in this county. They're very interesting something that are very near and dear to my heart and many other people in this county.
Well, thank you. That's good encouragement.
Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny.
And back to Apple John. You know, I would love to see a picture. If anybody has a picture, you gave
I
a good.
I have seen it, and I don't remember who's got it. But there is one here.
All right. If there's one out there somewhere, I wish they'd contact
me. I'm pretty
me.
Sure that Shacklitz has got a picture of him. And that may have been where it came from. And I thought at one time they used to have one at the City Cafe. I was almost positive they had one at one time. But Johnny, that just called Johnny Parker's, that's Andrew Parker's and Mary Bell's son. And Mary Bell was a Caffey. And just like I said, there was 11 of them, and they were all raised in the Cripple Creek area. So they're not too far from you.
No, Cripple Creek actually runs through my farm. Mm-hmm. We're up on the upper end. I was looking at it after that big rain, and it's nice to be on the upper end of the creeks, because we get a real good fast flow for a while, but mm-hmm. then, you know, in a day it's back down to its usual level. And somebody down the stream must be getting all of it coming from all different directions. That's where we get these floods, but it clears very quickly up where we are.
Tell me how far you are on gathering your information on Mr. Wright.
Oh, I could certainly do an article with what we've got now.
Uh-huh.
I like to get beyond what's been written before, so I'm still talking to people about him. The Halls Hill Kittrell group is, of course, very familiar yeah. with him. Jimmy Kerr is very close to him. But he was dubbed by some of the media the Wizard of Halls Hill, because mm-hmm. he was doing... working with electricity and self-educated way beyond even the utilities back in the 30s. But it started with his father. His father electrified the old Wright Mill on Cripple Creek. And one most commonly heard story is he rigged up lights up and down the creek just to decorate, producing electricity in his old mill.
Mm-hmm.
And he just got a small generator there in the mill, and he strung lights up and down the creek, thought that was awfully pretty. And that was about the time Sky Harbor was open. He mm-hmm. got a call from the air traffic controller over there and said, could you please turn those lights off at night?
Oh my.
It's confusing pilots coming in, because the way it was down the sides mm-hmm. of the creek, it looked like, you know, runway lights. And back then, of course, all navigation was by ground sight, what mm-hmm. you could see.
Now, how old a fellow would Enoch Wright be at this time?
Oh, my goodness. Enoch would have been about 110 if he was still alive, 115, something like that, because he would have been probably 20 years older than my father, who would be 90 this year, so 100 to 110, something in that range. Of course, the Wright family was one of the original families back when that part of the county was being settled. I wrote recently about Hans Hamilton, who was the original owner through the North Carolina grants, but he had no interest in coming into the area and farming, so he broke up a very large tract of land over there in that Halls Hill area, and Isaac Wright was one of the first successors, probably purchased mm-hmm. directly from Hamilton. So that takes you back to before there was a Rutherford County. We were all still part of Davidson County at that time.
Well, what you have put in the paper just whets your appetite for more information. It really does when you sit there and read it. And what progression do you have? Because I know that you have these articles in on Sunday's paper, but where do you stand once you start putting those? They're kind of like short stories. Mm-hmm. Once you put them in the paper, do you progress from there into your novels, or do you you just kind of cut it loose a little bit before you actually think that you're going to publish it?
I remember when we started, people would ask me, where do you come up with these stories? Mm-hmm. I don't get asked that much anymore. I guess we've done so many. Mm-hmm. But now, at any given time, I've probably got a file of maybe a dozen that are kind of in progress. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what's fun. If you come across something, you can add to the file. And when I start looking at a deadline for publication, I pick, sometimes based on what's going on in the community, sometimes mm-hmm. based on what's interesting, and sometimes, what's the nearest one to be completed. So that's why I say someone like Enoch Wright, I've been collecting information for quite a while. Our Apple vendor, I've heard of him and have a file on that one, mm-hmm. although I don't have much in that file. And
you have so many things going on at one time. How do you stay focused on your story?
Well, when I decide what the next story is going to be, then everything else is laid aside and we'll work on that mm-hmm. one. And sometimes it simply means sitting down and putting in good condition for reading a bunch of information. Other times it means filling gaps, because I'll write sometime and I think, no, that's too many ifs and whens, mm-hmm. and now you go back and try to close it up. And then sometimes I can pull out, like this last one we were just talking about, and we can come back to some other interesting points. But I was loaned by Jim Rich Roberts a book that, probably would have been his grandfather, who was a leader in the community, and in particular, I think, was in charge of the new Evergreen Cemetery. And he had the Laws of Murfreesboro in one pretty little book, leather-bound book, looked mm-hmm. like it had been barely used, but it was apparently in the family collection because it has a section on the ordinances relating to the operation of the cemetery and such. And I looked at that, and I just started thumbing through it, and I thought, this is fun and an easy way to write. And I think comparisons with today and just helping us remember how different things were 100 years ago. And mm-hmm. that's an easy one to write, in a few hours, just put that together. Other articles, send me to the archives in Nashville or tracing people down. I've talked to people in Colorado, people live moved to Florida, running down mm-hmm. information. And the best part is just sitting and listening when people get together and start talking, like the group this morning or the lunch group. Always pick up something. In fact, I was listening to some stories at lunch, and I thought, raccoon stories. Mm. A lot of people used to take raccoons as pets, and people are encouraged not to do that now.
It's still a wild animal.
Yeah, it always is. But raccoons, very intelligent animal.
Yes.
And I heard several, some funny, some disasters with people who had pet raccoons. You can make a story out of that, as long as they're Rutherford County raccoons.
I know Buddy Brown made a story out of it with me one time, because I actually caught a raccoon, and I was trying to find a place to release it, because not everybody wants a raccoon on their property, of course. Yeah. So they can be very destructive. So I took it out to Buddy's farm and turned it loose, and he found out I did it.
I was going
to
say, I'm not
he
sure.
He was not very that. Happy with me. I went somewhere one time. We had a cornfield, and when we got back, the cornfield was just absolutely demolished.
Yeah.
And it was raccoons.
Yeah. We were arguing that lunch, did raccoons have thumbs? I mean, we've all been told that only the human has an opposable thumb. Yeah. But a raccoon certainly could use that forepaw to manipulate things mm-hmm. and to pick up things and such.
Now, here's a story, and it's true, and you may not believe it, but I had a corn crib when we lived over on Braidable Pike, and we had lids on the, that you would actually screw on the top of the big cans.
Mm-hmm.
And I started losing corn and couldn't figure out what was going on. So I took my rifle out there one night and snuck in. And guess what? There were about 10 or 15 coons, and they were going all over the place. And they had actually got those lids off my barrel.
Oh, they had unscrewed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about smart. That's smart.
Yeah, I wonder, did they use two paws, or do they reach across the top like you?
Well,
and
I was envisioning they were probably standing over it and just using
just
both hands to screw it. Yeah, to unscrew it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's interesting that some of the things that you'll run across when you live out on a farm, if you really take notice.
Mm-hmm. Well, one reason I enjoy raising my kids on a farm is you're very close to life and death mm-hmm. on a farm. You can't be raised on a farm and not understand how life occurs and reproduction.
Right.
And you also begin to quickly understand that things die.
Yes.
And I think that's a good part of the education.
And I want to let you know that part of this show is brought to you by my cousin, Stan McNabb, Aunt Nancy's son, and that he provides quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. For a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb can you get free oil changes and free tires for the life of that vehicle.
HGTV, the leader in home design and know-how, has joined Shaw Floors, the leader in flooring and city tile and floor covering, the largest flooring retailer in our area, to bring you HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw Collection. Doug Young with City Tile.
Come to City Tile and see the new selections of the HGTV products exclusively at City Tile.
Your HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw authorized retailer. Visit citytile.net. City Tile and Floor Covering.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
Let's look ahead, a big weekend in front of us. The annual Craft Studio Tour is this coming Friday through Sunday. Six studios are participating this coming weekend. Oh, here's a big one you don't want to miss, a bicentennial reenactment. Witness the township's name of Cannonsburg being changed to Murfreesboro. Friday morning at 10 on the historic square. And this coming Friday and Saturday, the International Championship Performance Walking Horse Show at the Tennessee Miller Coliseum. The horse show proceeds benefit Kendall Wishes. And the adult play Underwear the Musical continues every night through Saturday night, 7:30 at MTSU's Tucker Theater. And they say the play is not suitable for children and young teens. And in Uptown Murfreesboro at the Arts Center, it's the musical Annie, Thursday through Saturday, 7:30 in the evening, and a Sunday matinee at 2. In neighboring Woodbury at the Arts Center of Cannon County, Irving Berlin's musical Annie Get Your Gun, 7:30 Friday and Saturday night, and a Sunday matinee at 2. Remember to enter the Bicentennial Christmas Parade. Go to the WGNS website, look across the top blue bar, and click on Parade. You'll find regulations as well as an entry form. The parade is Sunday, December the 11th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but the last day you can enter is November 30th, and that's sneaking up on us. By the way, bring new blankets by WGNS. On cold winter nights, the WGNS Blanket Brigade gives them out to homeless people. Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank.
Weather Eye.
We'll continue to see lots of sunshine throughout the afternoon. Temperatures hold fairly steady tonight. Mainly clear, low near 27. Sunny on Friday, high of 55. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 48.
It's turkey time, and Kirk and Birch is the borough's turkey expert. Deep fried or hickory smoked, Kirk and Birch is who you call. We'll make you the hero on Thanksgiving. Reserve yours today. Kirk and Birch, 893-3663.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
Today's guest, Greg Tucker.
And welcome back with us. And I'm talking about Greg Tucker. And I want to let you know that part of the show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive. And they're located at 2006 North Main Street. And that's in Shebbeville, Tennessee. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, give them a call. It's 1-800-264-6800, toll free. 1-800-264-6800, toll free. Or pull them up on the internet, PirtleHowerton.com. It's about a 20-minute drive down 231 South before you get into Shebbeville downtown area. Look on your left and you'll see the big signs and Pirtle Howerton. Drive in. Have a chat with them. They're some of the nicest people that you've ever run into. And just tell them exactly what you would like to have. Take a few drives. They're very nice to deal with. And make sure that that one is exactly the one that you want. And work out a deal with them and drive it back. In fact, it would be a beautiful day today. And I'll guarantee you, you'll be satisfied. Now, Melissa just brought us a note. And we were talking about Apple John,
and she
found she had a call.
Yeah, and I'm embarrassed. I should have remembered. C.B. Arnett's book, Mink Slide to Main Street, does have a picture of Apple John. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk to the family and see if we can get a copy or a digital, whatever they call it, mm-hmm. so we can use that, because I would like to write about people like Apple John. Those are the people that we forget when they disappear. They don't make the usual history books, but for many of us, they're very much part of our personal history.
I think they're a major part of our history, yeah. And I am so pleased and thankful we have people like you that keep that alive for us.
You know, we've been celebrating, I guess, for this area, or certainly for this area, the bicentennial of Murfreesboro. One of mm-hmm. the questions that came up, and this is local trivia, but the legislature originally said this new town is going to be called Murfreesboro, and they spelled it with an O-U-G-H at the end
right.
of it, the old English spelling for borough.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been asked several times, well, when and why did we change to the shorter spelling? And I can't tell you why, but I have recently been able to kind of trace down and narrow down the time frame. And as you might expect, in this country where we tend to be efficient, surplusage frequently gets kind of mm-hmm. dropped and left behind. But if you trace legislation relating to the city of Murfreesboro, you see that they very carefully adhered to that original legislative spelling mm-hmm. up through about 1840. And then it looks like they get lazy, because there are several pieces of legislation passed over that next 20 years, 20, 25 years, where they literally drop the UGH but put an apostrophe,
mm-hmm.
like you might if you're writing the word ain't, mm-hmm. to show that there's letters left out. You
Is
put
that
an apostrophe.
A word?
It's in the dictionary
it used
now.
To not be.
Yeah, it ain't arguable anymore. can't might be a better,
mm-hmm.
But they'd put the apostrophe, so it'd be O-R-O apostrophe. But then somebody apparently took exception to cutting things back, because in the 1850s, early 1860s, before the war, you see again legislating relating to the city, and it would spell out very precisely O-U-G-H on the end. Then we had the Civil War. And what I enjoy saying is the UGH, U-G-H, the UGH died during the Civil War.
I read your article, and that's exactly what you said.
Yeah, because soon after the war, again, you see legislation in the Reconstruction period relating to Murfreesboro. And from then on, it's very obviously the UGH is gone. And finally, in 1905, when they rechartered the city, in other words, they revoked the city charter and adopted a revised charter just to bring things up to date. At that point, they used the ORO, so that became more or less official. But nowhere in that time period does the legislative record address why we're doing this or just what the objection might be. Now, way back before even the Revolutionary War, Nashville was founded, or at least there was a settlement there, and it was called Nashboro, again with that borough spelling. We know that that was changed because in the Revolutionary War, the English obviously were unpopular. Mm-hmm. So that was the English suffix. Mm-hmm. They dropped it and put the French on. The French were very popular. They were our allies. So we got Nashville. Murfreesboro came along a little later, probably not that same sensitivity. So I imagine the spelling changed only because over time people got lazy about it and just began to drop it off. And when the legislature got to writing after the war, of course, there was a whole new legislature after the war, a lot of different people there, particularly in that Reconstruction period. They just adopted the shorter spelling. We may yet find something that explains why, but it's at least we can date now within a period of about 10 years when it actually changed, when it disappeared.
Well, let's use a test. When we send in our city taxes this year, why don't we send it to OUGH and put our check in there and see if that'll take care of it?
I believe you're trying to get an Occupy Murfreesboro movement started here.
Yeah.
It sounds like a tax protest to me.
Oh, no. Never.
Yeah, I somehow expected it would go on through.
Mm-hmm.
They could at least pull out the old charter and cite the old ones.
Now, what got you started on the laws back then? I have had a number of conversations over the years, especially when it concerns the cities, how their ordinances have changed so much and how thick the books are that encase
them. In the 1900, it's a slim volume, and I got a call, an email. Someone wanted to know where they could find a copy of it. I doubt that there were more than a couple of dozen at most printed. They were hand-bound in leather, and probably there were just a handful of them done. So the one that I've been loaned may well be one of the very, very last existing copies.
Well, I think we've got another caller, Greg. Caller, welcome aboard with Greg Tucker.
Hello, Truman. This is Jimmy Harris.
Hey, Jimmy.
Apple John there a few minutes ago. The Messick used to have a big portrait of Apple John in the old drugstore there on the square, and I can't remember whether Mr. Messick had it or Mr. Martin had it before, but it used to hang in that drugstore, and I imagine the Messick boys know where it is.
You know, I think I remember that too, now that you mentioned it. I'm surprised that you remembered it.
Apple John was quite an icon,
wasn't it? I try to forget.
How is Spencer doing today?
Doing great.
Good.
He's doing great.
Good. Well, tell him hi for me.
I'll do it.
I will.
Thought y'all might like to hear that, because you might find some information on it from the Messick boys.
All right. We'll check with the Messicks.
I'll put my lead detective on it.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Jimmy.
Well, my interest in the law doesn't stem from my being a attorney, but more from what it says about the way people lived back then. I mean, an obvious one that we find in the 1900 ordinances is a great deal of attention given to necessary houses, which you and I would call outhouses, because I assume virtually every building and structure where people worked or resided had some kind of access to an outhouse. And as you might expect, nobody wants to walk too far. So, you know, they'd be close behind the house and such.
Now, seemed like our school outhouses were awful far.
Particularly on the way back. It took a long time to get back, didn't it?
It did.
And the ordinances with respect to the necessary houses, they recognized two types. You had to adhere to those two types. One was the box type. Mm-hmm. I don't know how popular that was, but it'd be similar to what we have today when we talk about the portable toilets mm-hmm. and such, where from time to time you took the box out, you cleaned the box, disposed of the contents and such. And the other was the one over a pit, or they call it a fall. And the ordinance specified it had to be deep enough, wide enough, have enough volume, that it would never be offensive, talking primarily about smell, mm-hmm. and that there would be no visible waste. And then went on to specify that if you didn't quick lime it or tend it or empty your box, a rather stiff fine. I think it was $10 a day, which meant back in those days a rather stiff fine, and it would accumulate day to day once you'd been cited.
I never thought about what they did with that at the schools, because you had so many people that were going to the schools, and you had the outhouse that was being used constantly. It never occurred to me what they did with that.
I suspect somebody after school each day or early in the morning was having to tend to it. Mm-hmm. The ultimate penalty, if you didn't maintain it and you didn't jump to it when you were fined, was the town marshal could demolish it. And then charge.
What a great job.
Yeah, and then charge the owner for the expense of demolishing and covering and such as that. So, a rather stiff financial penalty, and you'd be relying on your neighbors, I guess, if you didn't get to it.
I wonder when the sewer system was first set up in Murfreesboro. Have you ever heard of that? Because that would have to be something that would...
Pretty close in time, because what was the first sewer? Was the town creek. It flows out of the Sand Springs and the Murphy Springs up here and looped through the town. We're not aware of it now. You can still see it, of course, up behind the Discovery Center, and you can see its mouth down here next to Cannonsburg. But originally, with a series of bridges, and the bridges I'd like to have seen architecturally, they were all very interesting. But it flowed down through about where the KFC is now on Church, mm-hmm. but then looped up and came up very close to the courthouse area, mm-hmm. within a block and a half, and then looped back and back down into the industrial area, which was called the Bottoms back some years ago, and then on into Lytle Creek. And the businesses didn't front on the creek. They backed up to the creek, and the homes backed up to the creek. So the creek actually was the sewer line flowing onto the creek. And in the old days, just the thin population, you could get away with that, because the flow of the creek did the same thing that our sewer systems do now, our treatment plants.
But people had wells back then that they were using for drinking water.
They sure did. That's why eventually they did away with that and have the, now our sewer systems, as you know, are isolated in such a way that there's no cross flow at all until after the treatment, and even then downstream from the treatment they monitor and such. But that was very common in cities. I know in Washington D.C. the Georgetown Canal was basically the septic, the sewer system for Georgetown, which was where population was concentrated, because you dump it in and the moving water aerated and turned it, and it flowed on downstream, and probably after a certain distance it was safe. But as the volume increases, obviously that turns into a dangerous health hazard, and
you don't want to be downstream.
No, you don't. And of course now Town Creek, in one of my early articles I traced where it is now. It's been boxed from the backside of the KFC all the way down to right beside Cannonsburg. It comes back up again, and that was all part of the, it was covered over before, but not moved. It literally was moved when they did the Broad Street, cleaned up the bottoms, cleaned up Mingsla and all that urban renewal in the 50s. We moved the Town Creek downhill, down towards the bottoms, and put it all underground.
What do you think, and you've been an attorney, of course, you've lived in Washington and been part of a lot of things going on that related to government. if you were to make a guess, what percentage of laws that we have on the book could be written off and go to a more simplified way of dealing with things?
If you're talking about the tax code, we could probably go back to a blank slate and come out again, and all of us would be better off for it. Laws generally, though, they do get. For instance, I mentioned that the city charter was essentially repealed and a new one put in place. Does recognize that things become obsolete. Mm-hmm. You look at today's code, I believe 49, I may be wrong, 49 was perhaps the last time it was completely revised, but it has been amended and amended and amended and amended since then. So most of the time, the laws are pretty much up to date.
You know, we ran into situations a lot of times when I was at the sheriff's office that laws that were on the book for 100 years or more were still on the book and did not apply to anything.
Is that right?
And sometimes we would find that we were in error in some of the judgments we made because there were existing laws that were anti what we were doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was kind of silly type stuff, but sometimes it would kind of throw you off where you felt like, you know, we've got a problem here.
Yeah. Well, part of that I think I would call neglect, because periodically, you know, the laws, particularly laws relating to behavior and conduct in an area, need to be reviewed and revised. And sometimes they're overlooked.
And we need to let you know that the last part of this show is brought to you by Blue Restaurant and Bar. And they're located in the Jackson Heights Plaza, and they have something for everyone on their menu. From steaks, fresh seafood, pastas, salads, appetizers, and special items unique to Blue. They have 6 items for lunch at just $6. Enjoy their Sunday Live Jazz Brunch beginning at 10 a.m. with music from Larry Pinkerton and Avant Lane. Whether it's enjoying the courtyard at dinner, the game on the big screen TVs, or piano music Friday and Saturday evenings, there's something for everyone at Blue. Blue Restaurant and Bar, located in the Jackson Heights Plaza. Be sure to visit their website at blue-restaurant.com. That's Blue Restaurant and Bar owners Marty Brown and Greg Pogue.
Hi, I'm Don Patterson, an internal medicine physician with Middle Tennessee Medical Group, a new multi-specialty office dedicated to the health and well-being of you and your family. Our physicians provide expertise in family and internal medicine, as well as other specialties. Middle Tennessee Medical Group offers 2 locations in Murfreesboro for your convenience. To make an appointment with a Middle Tennessee Medical Group physician, call 396-6800 or visit middletnmedicalgroup.com.
Heritage South Community Credit Union now has a new home, 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire.
This is Darlene Robinson, branch manager. I invite you to visit us soon and find out what your community's credit union is all about. We offer free debit cards and great checking, plus exceptional rates on loans and savings. You can join if you live, work, worship, or attend school in Rutherford, Bedford, or Marshall County.
Heritage South Community Credit Union, new offices at 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire. Federally insured by the NCUA.
It's time. Catch the energy. Blue Raider College football.
Don't miss the last home game of the season as your Blue Raiders face off against FIU on November 26th. It's not too late to experience the Blue Raider triple play. $10 gets you 3 Blue Raider home games, including football, men and women's basketball.
Visit GoBlueRaiders.com or call 1-888-YES-MTSU. Tackle boredom. Catch the energy. Go Blue Raiders.
You've known him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
Greg, it's been another great show. I don't know why it goes by so fast, but it does. I guess it's because you're so interested. I know that's part of it.
Well, I need to caution you, though, that if you do go back to 1900, don't use a slingshot and don't fly a kite in town. Both of those were expressly prohibited.
Really? People
really?
Are always telling me to go fly a kite. I don't know what that is.
I think they're trying to get you in trouble.
Are you going to the Kittrell Ham Breakfast Saturday
morning? I'll be at the Kittrell Ham Breakfast probably about 7:30 in the morning.
And it's going to be a big fundraiser. And everybody knows that the food out there at Kittrell on Saturday morning is you can't beat it. I mean, and the fellowship that you have out there is so much fun. And, you know, I think they need to raise a little bit more money this time because they lost one of their fire trucks, or it kind of rolled over.
Yeah, I'm on the board there. We had some insurance that helped there. But the breakfast profits have been off a little bit. I hope people will come back and help us a little bit. Yeah, over the last year, they've been off a little bit. So the volunteer fire department out in that part of the county and in many of the other parts of the county is an important essential service. We need to support it.
It's second to none, and I've watched it grow over the years, and it's always kept itself at high standards. And you got the best people that you can find working for that fire department. And I know my buddy Bud Mitchell has been very instrumental in that fire department, and along with a number of other things that go up in that end of the community.
Bud going to be with you here soon?
Actually, Bud is going to be on tomorrow. You know, we may talk about the fire department a little bit, or whatever he wants to talk about. He's got a wealth of information. I appreciate everybody listening today, and I know that they're a lot wiser because of Greg's information. And the thing about Greg is he always makes historical events fun. And they are fun because, you know, we've had some of the most unique people in the world that have lived right here in Rutherford County. And that's what really makes this community so strong.
And I enjoy that I've been asked to be a speaker with more and more regularity. Tonight I'm going to be at the Big Springs Neighborhood Watch Club.
They're a good bunch of people.
Yeah, and we're going to talk.
I've spoken to them.
We're going to talk about Big Springs history.
I bet you'll run into some people that may know more about it than you do. That very rarely happens.
I'm absolutely sure of that.
and it is a very historical community. Yeah, and just how it got started is amazing. So have a good time tonight.
Thank you.
And we'll see everybody tomorrow. And it'll be at 2:00 with Mr. Glenn Bud Mitchell.